Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of the Sport Kite Podcast. I am your host, Nick O'Neill. And guess what? I wanted to thank you for tuning in and listening. I guess that's my go-to thing that I say at every one of these episodes. I'm going to have to change that up. And, I'm kind of laughing a little bit because one of our kitties just jumped up in my lap and is really enjoying the podcast mic. I don't know if you can hear her purring at all. It's pretty quiet. But yeah, she is rubbing up against the microphone and she loves to sit in my lap when I sit here and do the editing for these podcast episodes. So she has kind of been here for pretty much every one of these episodes. She's really sweet. Her name's Nivea. She's a cute little black kitty. All right. So I completely just derailed the intro to this episode, but I wanted to get into it and say, this one is the second part of the conversation that I recorded after Sport Kite Camp with Michel Gagnon. And we get a little bit more into team dynamics, what it means for leaders and followers, and how dual line team flying is an active endeavor, and also how it's kind of important to be visible. So, since I kind of bunged up this whole intro, let's just go ahead and get into the episode and kind of have a good old listen.
I've been kind of diving into team dynamics and, you know, just looking at like Sport Kite history past, a lot of the bigger teams actually had like two people or sometimes three, usually just two people that were either related to one another or married to one another. So they already had some sort of connection, and then you're putting more people in. And then you have all these other teams where it's incredibly different people that are coming together and trying to find where they can cross and come together and create something. And just, yeah, I've been super interested in what it is specifically, what trait it is that is allowing people to do that. And I think for me, this is just my personal experience from teams. I think a big part of that is no one is really coming in wanting to be the leader or wanting to be the follower. They want to be a team member. And naturally, leaders and followers come out of it.
There's that, but for instance, let's see. I'm taking you. You say, okay, you come fly with me, okay? And then I have a responsibility to take you with me in the space. I have to direct you, okay? So it has to become easy. If it
right,
it has naturally. Easy and natural,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, naturally, and in this situation, you would be the leader. That's just naturally how you would fall, and I would naturally be the follower. Right. But I don't think we're coming with that intention, right?
Well, you don't know what to do, so you have to be directed slowly, and that is the beauty
right.
of doing it. We haven't done it, okay? So it's like a bird showing another bird to fly. Okay, it's literally that. Have you watched nature? The bird would follow the other birds, you know, the little one, when the little one start flying, it's so cute. You know, I see you with the goose, I see you with the ducks, I see you with the, you know, it's funny how the little ones start to go. And it's so, there's some basic, so basic that you don't, when you don't know the basic, you just can't fly. And what is basic? It's so subtle that it cannot even explain it. You have to experience it. And that's what this team thing on the field is. When you show someone to fly, there's a way of showing it. And that's the process that needs to be taught. How do you, you know, You can't do slow if the thing goes fast. Where is the slow move? Where do you go? How do you describe? How vision? What do you position in the hands? Where do you look? How do you look? Don't move. Don't move. Stop moving. Stop. The reset. Where's the reset? Zero. Where's the zero? How do you describe the win window? What are you looking at? It's all those questions that if you don't ask answers, you're not quite there yet. Are you breathing? Where's your foot position? How's your waist? How's your spine? How's your neck? Where's the center? Oh, so we're going to divide that in four. Where's the center? Where is the center? Is the center moving? Is the center, I develop a way around that finally we just fly because it's limited. We're sharing the same wind window. It's very, very limited what we can do. And when we share the wind window, there's a structure that you tell the others where you're going. You are all the time telling the others where you're going because you are always, you're either on the ground, ready to launch, or you're in the sky doing something. You either one or the others. So if you're on the ground ready to launch, well, we know you're going to launch. Okay, we'll call. She's going to launch. Come in. The communication of sharing the window. But you launch, and then you decide to do 10 turns because your lines are twist. Oh, okay, so let's wait that she's done, that the person is done with untwisting the line. You should have launched straight line, untwisted. Okay? Simple things like this. Sharing the wind window with a structure. What structure? Well, follow is infinity, is the starting point of structure, which is essentially exploring the wind window with a constant movement in the kite. And that is the rehearsals. It's like sending all the voice of all the chorus, tuning the instruments, fine-tuning the orchestra, the wind window established with the infinity shape of the curve, going from height 75% to 25% of the 100, of the wind window, going to the nipple and the nipple, making nice half circle, keeping the space between each kite, the number two, if you four kites, the number two established the distance between each kite. So the number two is essential because number two is putting the distance between one, two, two, three, three, four, So, and then all the flyers has to have the same position on the ground, same ability to follow and push turn. A push turn will decelerate the kite. A pull turn will accelerate the kite. So knowing the difference between a push and a pull is like the basic knowledge of flying a dual line, follow each other. And then we're going to do a split. The odd number will go on one side and the even numbers. So number one and three will go one side, two, four. Normally, one and three will go right in a split and a two and four will go. But I've seen it doing the opposite, depending where you are in the country and where you are in the world. So you need to listen to the command of the captain. It's going to say split one, three, on the right side, odd, even number, left. So, and then you do whatever the rest of the command is. Often use a 180, a pivot, pivot up, pivot down, all kind of terms to say you turn around and do a pass through type of thing, passing through, making a tread and all kind of things. So those are fun things, simple things to do. To enjoy the fun, precision. Again, you don't need to be an expert flyer to do that. You just need to have the same kite with the same length of lines and a decent preparation of you know, capacity to follow the other kite in the same trajectory, you know, not cutting things. And precision is made of straight line and corners, you know. So defining the line is a nice pulling feeling. When you go up, you pull all the way up, you turn around and push and pull again. It's like when a kite goes up, you always like a little pull, and when the kite goes down, you always like a little push, you know. So when you do a little spin up, you're pulling, and the kite do a little turn, but it doesn't lose height when it turns. It stay at the same location, you know. So this is control for precision. It's all in the hand position, switching your body, moving your body. Always have your hands between your heart and the kite, John Barresi says.
Exactly. It's a very good, you know, reminder for people, is to have their hands there and to just, you know, instead of going into the Jesus mode and having their hands all the way outstretched, yeah, and or trying to ride a bicycle, right? They're, or yeah, steer a car, they're nice and close.
I call it the reset. The reset. Reset is bringing your hands in front of you.
Nice. Yeah. I call it neutral. Go back to neutral.
Yeah. You're having a ball of light right in front of you. All right. This is it. And then from there, you're making a correction. You want to say something? Yes. Go ahead.
I was going to ask about, you know, especially with dual line versus quad line, right? There is a lot more movement across the ground, right? You have to step, you have to move, you have to walk. Quad line, you can stand shoulder to shoulder generally and fly. You don't have to have a lot of give and take on the ground.
Yeah.
Just as a completely random question, have you worked with or flown on a team with people with big differences in height, right? So their step is not going to cover as much ground as, say, you know, like John Barresi is very, very tall. I don't know if you met Willow Robin, she's a lot shorter, and her trying to fly, like one step for John is like three running steps for Willow. But that's on quad line. So I was just wondering if you've run into that on dual line and
how
you adjusted
line,
for it.
In dual line, most flyers cannot move 3 feet ahead, 3 feet behind. They're we need to move like 6-10 feet ahead when we go and do some. Depend again, if your kite is pulling a lot and you're flying a lot of wind, you have to move forward a lot in order to land. But if you have the decent kite, which doesn't pull too much, you don't need to, you know, the setup is essential here in order to adapt your movement. But we move in 3 or 4 feet easily all the time in a dual line, all the time. And it's kind of part of the sport, actually, moving forward and back. It's anticipation. It's anticipation for landing. You know, when you're in an airplane and they say, buckle your belt, we're going to land. There's an anticipation created. And the anticipation is essential for the dual line flyer. The anticipation is to be able to have the hands on the back at the right moment to pull it forward. And if you don't have that right timing and right anticipation, you're a little bit behind or you're too fast. You know, it's timing thing. So, yes, and you have to move, throw yourself in the front like crazy in order to, if there's a lot of wind, it's sport. It's a sport. It's kind of fun, actually. I like it.
Yeah, dual line is definitely a lot more engaging and interactive and more of a sport. This is my perception, right? Is dual line's more of a sport combined with a performance, and quad line is more of a performance somewhat combined with sport aspects.
Quad line is a sport too. I'm sorry.
I'm not totally knocking it and saying it isn't a sport. It's just quad line to me, because because you have the time. You have the time to pause and make your adjustments. It's not fast action, right? It's more, I think, I do, it happens. So,
well, yeah. I call it extreme sport. Extreme, when I advertise sometimes, you know, when the extreme kite, people would think of a traction kite, snow kite, kite surf, okay? And the dual line aspect of flying a jet and landing, it's not there in the mind of people. They don't see it as a sport unless we do it, okay? And because we are doing it, and because we are seeing how much energy, you know, when I do a routine, I'm exhausted after the routine. I'm totally exhausted. I give my 100%, you know, and the whole time, and wow. It is a sport. I'm sweating like crazy. So it's the adrenaline of flying a dual line need to be known, need to be experienced. Okay, people would buy this $50 kite and do a line and go and fly like a fly. You know, a fly doesn't do a straight line. You know, if you do the fly mode, you're doing a zigzag all the time, and correcting. You know, that's the fly zone. That's a fly flight. So, so yes, everything you do to promote the sport, Miss Sport Lady, thank you again for what you do.
Thank you. I'm trying. I want to see more and more flyers out there, and you know, because I've been so entrenched in preserving the history of our kite community, I've seen what it used to be, and I hate that I kind of missed the peak time of sport kiting in general. And I would love to see that come back.
It will come back. It is coming back, actually. It is coming back. It's just too bad that some kites are difficult to cities don't necessarily want to have the kite activities for big people to come in and do a big event. They want mostly kite activity for their own people. They want their people to participate instead. But this is something that needs to be promoted, definitely. And that's what I do. That's what I did over there. I brought all the kites, provided to them to play in the same wind with me. And it's a toy. And that's what we did. It was a good experience for everyone, you know, for me too. And have to be done again. When is your next event for you?
The next Sport Kite Camp is most likely going to be in spring. We're doing a poll right now, asking for suggestions where in the world to do next year's Sport Kite Camps. And we're going to kind of do a mix, like we did at WSKIF, where it was a little bit more structured. You know, we had the talks, we had all of that. Typically at Sport Kite Camp, we make it very kind of free form. We have, you know, some top flyers there, but it is meant as like, let's come together, like you saw under the tent, let's all play together, let's explore something together, mm-hmm. and let's come with this full growth mindset, mm-hmm. and see what we can learn from each other, right? And making it a very welcoming space for brand new people to get into this sport, because that's one of the other things that's been super important for me. And also, apologies, a whole bunch of people just walked into where I'm at. So if it's really loud,
I don't hear them.
But one of the things that's always been really, really important for me, and that I experienced when I first started flying, was this weird gatekeeping against new flyers. there's extremes. There's a handful of people that reach out and they drag you in and they're like, nope, you're brand new. Come on over here. We're going to throw you in a line. You're going to fly with us. Right. Which is like, oh my God, like I literally just picked up a kite and now John Bressy is telling me to stand in line with him. But a lot of what I experienced when I was trying to fly in various spaces was very much, you're new, you're going to fuck up my stuff, so go over there and fly. Stay away from my stuff. My stuff is expensive. Your stuff is cheap. Go away. And it was so disheartening, especially because as you mentioned, and every sport kite flyer knows, almost all of us are alone where we fly. We don't have big communities of people that we can go hang out with. So the thought of going somewhere and you see other sport kite flyers, you're like, oh my God, it's someone else that likes the thing I like. I want to go hang out with them. I want to go learn from them. I want to go be around them. And then you get that response. It was very disheartening. And I still see it to this day. I see a lot of newbies being turned away because they're not flying a top tier kite or because they like putting a tail on their kite or all of this. And I'm like, look, if we just opened up that space and made it very welcoming for them to step into, they can learn so much more than doing a figure eight in the sky and crashing in the ground. And then they'll really love the sport. They'll really, really fall in love with it. So yeah, that's one of the other big things for Sport Kite Camp is to open up that space that invites all levels to share the field together. So,
well, we have to
answer to when the next one is scheduled.
We have to be selfish and fly for ourselves too with others. Okay. So yourself, you have to be selfish and say, okay, I'm going to give my time to fly with me. And see if you got to integrate somebody with you. You have to have two kites. You know, you have to provide kite. You have to invite somebody to come and fly with you. One to one. Okay. And yeah, tough. I'm lucky. I know, yeah, I'm lucky. You know,
I fully agree.
No, seriously. Look, Marek. This is outside the shop. My car. Let's show you. All my kites are there. They're all there.
All put together. Because, of course, no one's going to, folks won't be able to see this on the podcast. We're looking at the back of his car, and it looks like you've only popped the standoffs and maybe the lower spreader, but they're all set up, ready to fly in the back of his van.
Yeah. And of course, I got this trailer.
Boy. And a full trailer. Awesome.
Nice, with
more kites, beautiful. So I remember because of the other side of the kite world that I'm involved in, my sister site that I run, the Fortuna Found. Beautiful. So I've been noticing a big trend, especially for places up there in Canada, of them shutting down kite flying in parks, mainly because of fighter kites that are using cutting string and stuff like that. Have you found any effect on your sport kite flying up there, or is it all?
No, in the town we are here, where I am in Varennes, we have a big park, and there's not a problem here. Yeah, I saw what Gary Mark put on the town of Milton, I think, or something. And
Yeah, I keep a list of those because I've written some white papers and helped folks with advocacy for maintaining kite flying in their parks or their public spaces. And unfortunately, that stuff keeps happening. And we're finding, sadly, that while it might be fighter kites with cutting line that are the problem, it's the rest of us that are having to suffer the consequences. Like, we lose access to our parks because some kid with a kite was running around and it let off and it hit the power lines. And so they blame all of us for it, right? It's like, no, we're different.
Well, it's a sad story. It's a sad story, but we don't have that many fighters around. It's not something that's been used, and if they use, they do touch line. They don't cut the line. Okay.
Very good to hear. Very good to hear. Anyway, sorry, that was a complete like detour on top of what we've been talking about, team dynamics and team flying. So
for the little brochure, the
which I'm fixing, by the way.
Yeah, but the brochure you did, it was very interesting. Most of the information is there, and it needs to be read because the basic information is there. So the sequence of the pictures are wrong.
Okay? Yeah, I'm fixing that.
It's a good idea. I will redo that anytime. Anytime you want to meet and participate and do the same thing, I'll do. Okay.
Awesome. Yeah. So I'm going to put the fixed version online with your previous pod. Well, it'll, by the time this publishes, it'll be your previous podcast of your talk. And then we can always update from there, add whatever information you want. So for folks listening right now, if you go to sportkite.org and you click on the Sport Kite Camp tab, and you'll see a drop-down that says Fireside Chats. You'll find Michelle's Fireside Chat about team flying, and then we'll add this podcast episode as well to that so people can further link. And then all your contact information is also on there. So anyone that's wanting to get in touch with you or visit your shop or any of that, all your contact info is there. So what's up next for you in the world of team flying? Are you going to try and make it to, I don't know, when is the next?
Well, I'm producing One Sky, One World in October.
Oh, nice.
With 2 days of event in my park, in my own town here. Okay. So it's my kite festival, One Sky, One World. And I have my team of four lines. I got two teams, the four line and dual lines, you know. Often it's the same flyers. All the quad lines are the dual line flyers, but having the two set up at the same time in the sky, we need a lot of flyers, and we do. We provide that. It's kind of neat with music. And One Sky, One World, I'm doing also a memorial on a Sunday morning of One Sky, One World. I thought it was a great idea to see that memorial at Whiskash. I was very impressed by the mass ascension, the organization of the whole thing over there. Wow, it's a good crew, you know, all the single line flyers flying incredible stuff in sand, you know, in sand with the technique of, you know, putting as much as you can on the line and lots of wind. It's a lot of expertise, you know, it's a lot. So, and then we'd be in spring, me and Mario De Luca want to put a team to represent Canada in Italy. So a team that do a line.
Serbia or?
Serbia, yes.
Oh, man. I so want to go to that one.
Yeah. So we'd like to make a team of dual line and, of course, four line also, but mostly dual line. And Mario got himself a set of avatar, same as Colin, and the practice routine. And he's coming here in October, Mario. So we're going to fly together with my team here. So there's a lot to come, really, really, in the spectacular, let's see, outcome of dual line flyers. It's very active. It's not stationary. It's not, it's a demanding process. It's completely, and it's fully attracting to me to continue the process. And going to meet you, what you provide to me was a startup motor, startup process that will never stop.
Awesome. Yeah, actually, I've heard that from a lot of people that attended at WISCF. They said that they felt a spark afterwards. So I've already had two people message me and say, hey, after WISCF, I'm wanting to start a dual line team. And I'm like, that is amazing. You know, if we get a few more dual line teams here in North America, yep, that would be incredible because we have not had representation. at the World Sport Kite Championships in a while. I mean, we have had Air Zone there for, you know, quite a few years, but they've stopped flying. And
you know what? You know what? Top of the line. There's a lot of makers that made a lot of team kite that everybody has. They all have team kite, oldies team kite. They're still good. They're still good, you know, and they're back in the market, changing hands, put it out, making, you know, check things up. They're still working. It's like flying an old Mercedes, you know. You could use the new Mercedes, but you could
very fly nice. Mercedes. Okay. Do you have any, I guess, wishes or desires to go compete at Berks-sur-Mer, the World Sport Kite Championship?
I'd like the Sport Kite Championship to come here.
I would like it to come here as well. I think the last time it was in the States, it was in Seaside or Lincoln City. I can't remember one of those. And that was like back in the 90s, early 2000s. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's been over there in France. But I've been wanting to attend that for a long time. I'm looking forward to it, hopefully soon.
Well, and then, again, the opportunity, transportation, the opportunity of getting a lot of people together so you have a decent event. The organizer has a good job to do, hosting everything, preparing everything. So we go there and have fun, you know. It's like, say, we don't have to set up the tents. We just go and set up our kite. And we have the easy part, you know, really. So any place is good, any time is good. As long as I live, I want to do that.
Awesome. I'm only
66.
You're young for flying.
Yeah.
I have it in my back pocket that hopefully sometime soon I can actually organize a sport kite camp down in Colombia or Brazil. Because I don't know, have you been watching? There's some teams coming out of there.
Yeah.
And they're doing a lot of what you've been talking about, is, you know, just focusing on these basics and the moving together. And independently they go work on tricks and stuff like that, but just, you know, launches, landings, moving through the sky and focusing on that spacing instead of, can we do perfect cascades next to each other? And it's, I'm loving watching it. There's an all women's team down there.
Yeah.
There's also a mixed team down in Colombia. And sport kiting has really taken off.
I saw you fly. I saw you fly, and I know Paul's teaching you. So you have the,
no, Paul. Paul is not teaching me. He refuses to teach me.
Well, anyway, but you will gain by flying with me. You need influence. You need other influence.
That's always my problem.
And that's the thing, you know, learning to fly a dual line is something you could that could be done. It's like I give you a violin, you know, I'm a violin maker. Oh. Those things here.
I am a classically trained violinist.
Okay, so I make them.
I saw
from scratch, and now it's in tune. Now you have to play music. That's another part, you know. So we have the kite, we have the tool. You have to play the music, you have to fly it, and you have to learn to make the scale. You have to learn to make the different capacity, the limitation of the kite and what it can do. And then that's it. That's the ABC. You're using those tools. Nobody teach us the tools. They're funny. It's funny. How come a straight line? Yeah, a straight line. What is a technique for a straight line? Put your hands together. It's going to make a straight line. You know, put your hands together. The lines are straight, are the same length. It's going to make a straight line. It cannot make a curve. Okay. How do you make a curve? I make a difference. Oh, okay. How much difference? Well, you want a sharp or a long curve, you know? So you're graduating, you're gauging, you're, and that has to be taught. And when you know it, that's it. You know it. You don't even have to think about it anymore. Now you're starting to have fun because you don't think about it. And you have this dopamine going in the brain that says, ooh, it's an energy. I'm feeling energized, you know, I'm feeling energy. Of course, the thing is shaking like crazy in the wind, the lines, and you have that in the land, and you're facing the sun, and you're breathing like hell. Of course, it's energy. It gives you energy, you know. The payback is the fun. The fun is what? You feel good. You feel good. You want to keep going. So that's what makes me going. That and coffee. Chocolate.
Yeah, the running joke for me has been people don't know how I have the time to do everything. And I'm like, oh, it's two things. I have an obsession for coffee and I don't sleep. I just keep going. It's partly true. I actually get quite a bit of sleep, but I do love coffee. I always have coffee around me and too much of it.
Well, you got good concentration, good will. I think we talked a little bit about what you do in work, but that's not the point. Is you have a skill of listening, understanding what the other person is trying to say, your capacity of nuance, you know? And you like to share that with people. This is you created that tools of be able to pass a message. And thank you for that. I could share my passion.
Well, thank you very, very much, Michel. And we'll try and get this podcast posted here shortly, and hopefully everyone enjoys it. And last little thoughts. I'll include it in the show notes, but do you want to share how people can reach you if they have questions, or like what's the easiest? Is it email or via your website, or which is the easiest way to reach you?
Email, website, phone, messenger, Facebook, Coriolis.com. CorioliskiteCorioliskite.com. CorioliskiteCorioliskite.com. Or in French, cerfvolantcoriolis.com. So same thing, CorioliskiteGmail.com or cerfvolantcoriolis@gmail.com. So Coriolis is perfect. The planet that spins. Look the friend.
Yeah.
My friend. The spinning.
For those of you listening, he has a globe in the background and he's spinning it. Yeah. Well, awesome. Thank you. Thank you very, very much for this.
Love. Thank you to you.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that. And something that stuck out for me was kind of that whole idea about the promotion of team flying and how we kind of need to be more visible. And perhaps one of the best ways that we can be more visible is that we actually come to the kite field with all the tools that someone might need to start a team. It's definitely a great concept. I know it kind of is difficult for a lot of people, but if you show up with everything that someone might need to join your team, it's a lot easier to get them team flying with you. So yeah, that's definitely got me thinking about opportunities and things that we can do going forward, such as perhaps having a team set of kites for Sport Kite Camp that we just have on hand for whoever comes, and they could potentially fly it, even if they've never flown on team, and just kind of play around with stuff like that. So that may be happening. And we are trying to figure out the planning for next year's Sport Kite Camp. So do stay tuned. We're going to try and do a handful of them again throughout the year, kind of have them in various locations. We are seriously entertaining the thought of an international one. So if you have a suggestion, let us know, because we definitely want to make it happen. All right, with that, I'm going to go ahead and sign off. And I'm not running to the kite field because I hear the wind blowing. I am just going to sit here with the kitty and love on her and tell her all of the greatest stories I can think of and whisper sweet nothings into her ear while she purrs into mine. So there's your image. I'm sitting here with one of the sweetest kitties in the world. All right, I'll see you guys on the next one.